Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. So no big surprise, I talk a lot. And now I can share some of the incredible people that cross my path and the interesting conversations that we have. The Private Practice Secrets podcast is all about sharing our business experiences and harnessing our collective wisdom. My guests are amazing. They're bold, brave, and they're honest. There are many laughs, and surprisingly, there's frequent talk of wine. We're sure you're really going to enjoy these unplugged private practice chats. So settle in, let's get the conversation started. Welcome, Simone Dudley, occupational therapist, Sue Cameron, speech pathologist. And you guys are the awesome founding directors of Therapy Connect, in case you weren't sure. I knew that. I'd love to hear from maybe Simone first and then Sue. Why did you do this? What were the drivers behind this business? And you're going to have to explain a little bit about what makes you so different.
Okay, so I guess my story is that I was sitting on my farm in my isolated patch of southwest New South Wales, feeling very frustrated about my desire to work and the limitations that I have regarding accessing work. And I started thinking that there must be people that need an OT that can't access an OT as much as I want to be an OT. And how about this whole online crazy idea? You know, what would be possible? What could be possible? So that began, I suppose, something for me to contemplate whilst I was also travelling 130k one way to my face-to-face practice. And that really was the beginning of something that I became a little bit addicted to and the beginning of the story of Therapy Connect.
Yeah, addicted to, I think, is a really good word. I'd swap in determined as well, because there was no way that it was not going to happen. So quickly before Sue shares her sort of story, what is Therapy Connect? What do you do that's different from everyone else?
Well, Sue and I, as co-directors of Therapy Connect, provide our speech and occupational therapy services to children and families exclusively online. So we work via video conference with families and other means, depending upon the internet in the location that families are often very remote. So we are 100% telepractice.
Wow. And I would like to add trailblazers as well. We'll get to the trailblazing bit.
We're trying very hard.
Sue, what was your story towards Therapy Connect?
Well, there's some surprising similarities between my story and Simone's, because we both are married to farmers and we both live remotely from where we've been working. But I did hang in and work in a public health system for 30 years, where I travelled 55 kilometres to work and 55 kilometres back every day. And it was in my work at Western District Health Service in Hamilton where I started to use telepractice. So we had a chief executive officer who was very early adopter of telehealth and was keen to see that in our organisation. And I was really keen to use the same type of technology that you use for video conferencing. I wanted to use the same type of technology for helping train students. So I had a big Polycom set up in my office that I could use to observe students remotely. And then we started using that to see clients from outlying areas as well. So it really came out of a desire to see people that are in the country getting access to services that are as good as the services that you get in the city. And I guess, you know, we could do things like that. We could use our telehealth to not necessarily just to provide therapy to people who were remote, but to have a video conference with experts in Melbourne to save people like people with motor neurone disease from travelling to Melbourne for a consultation. So it was really helpful like that. And it was great for a generalist person such as myself to be able to hook up, you know, be able to have a meeting with people who were really experienced in other in specific areas when needed.
Absolutely amazing. How did you meet Simone?
Well, it's funny to say we met online, Simone and I.
Oh, no way. I didn't know that. That's outrageous.
Yeah, we were both trying to establish similar businesses at the same time, and I'd been associated with the National Rural and Remote Support Service.
Oh, Sarah, now called Sarah.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, Sarah had this National Rural and Remote Support Service that was set up to try and help people in rural and remote areas to access HACWA, helping children with autism funding and Better Start funding. And they had an expert reference group. And because I wanted to learn more about what was in the space, I joined that group. And then it was through Sarah that Simone also was in contact with them, and we got in contact together. And we're surprisingly like-minded, really, and we have similar goals and objectives, and it's been great to work with Simone.
How like often, an internet banking business.
Yes. So how often do you guys act? Because you're, I guess, we've got people listening to this from all over the world. You're hundreds and hundreds of kilometres apart. How often do you actually meet face-to-face?
Well, it was ages until we actually met in person face-to-face, but we were great mates before we even met in person. So we would meet a couple of times a week online, and we talk on the phone, we text, and we use all the different types of ways to communicate. But we do see, we speak on a video conference, you know, at least once a week, don't we, Simone?
I would say we're in touch probably almost every 2 or 3 days, really. Mm-hmm. And we consider this as face-to-face for us, video conferencing.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, certainly nice to clink our glasses together every now and then.
Absolutely, absolutely. Wow, good story, good story. I think it would help me understand some of the language around digital health, telehealth, e-health, e-this, tele-that. What is the current best language to be using to describe the use of technology to provide services?
I think the best language to use is the language that people might understand. You know, it's important as a speech pathologist and everybody to have a shared vocabulary. So I tend to call myself a speech therapist now instead of a speech pathologist, because I think that hasn't been well accepted in the past by lots of people. We're working overseas, you know, British speech pathologists are speech and language therapists and Americans are speech language pathologists. So when we're working overseas, I just call myself a speech therapist. And mainly with our online practice, we're doing therapy rather than assessment and diagnosis and things. I mean, we do that as well, but a lot of what we do is therapy. A lot of the people that come to us have already been assessed more recently, so a lot of it's therapy. But in the Speech Pathology Australia guidelines about telepractice, they call it telepractice, teletherapy, telehealth. So it really depends on the audience you're speaking to, really, I think.
What's your favourite? What's your preferred terminology?
I like to call it teletherapy.
Okay.
I suppose I sort of see that telepractice is sort of the umbrella, telehealth, and, yeah, that we do teletherapy. That's the verb, probably.
Or online therapy. That's pretty well accepted as well, isn't it?
Okay. Good. All right. I will try and use the correct terminology from here on in. So we've heard already that you're providing virtual teletherapy to Australian children. Let's talk about that a little bit. But then I also want to talk about your overseas work as well, because Have Laptop will not travel but will provide services. So what are you working on at the moment and delivering for Aussie kids?
Well, thanks, Kathy. It's Simone. So we, I suppose, working at the moment with a range of clients. So everything from a little boy down the road with a diagnosis of autism whose parents just can't travel the hour trip to therapy, all the way through to a new referral living off the tip of the Northern Territory on an island, for goodness sake. If you have the map of Australia and put your finger where you thought the middle of Australia is, we've also got a client living in the central desert of the Northern Territory. So we are kind of all over.
You're all over it.
And don't for a minute think that you have to have good internet access. You do have to have good internet access, but it doesn't have to be easy. For instance, the client that lives in the centre of Australia, there's no general internet access whatsoever, no phone line, no mobile landline, so we're delivering via satellite in schools. So yeah, that's about as remote as it can kind of get, really.
Gosh, wow. Wow.
And that child has cerebral palsy. So I suppose the types of therapy that an occupation, you think as an occupational therapist that it must be difficult to deliver services in the physical disability spheres, but in fact what we're finding is that it's highly possible. And, yeah, highly possible.
Mm. Okay, thank you. So what about your Aussie clients? Have you got a similar sort of spread and
Yes, there's a bit of a spread, but there's also a few areas where there's quite a few clients. So it's difficult to have word of mouth about your service when you're appealing to people in such different areas. And, it might just be one person in a small community that might be needing therapy. But there's somewhere in Western Australia that I've been working and I've had four clients over there. So they've clustered there. There's a bit of a cluster in Alice Springs of children that I've seen. And there's a cluster in Japan as well of children that come from the same school. So often they're recommended by the school teachers to the families. So we're delivering our services in homes and in schools with learning support assistance. Sometimes we're using an allied health person to help us, a support worker to help us in childcare and kindergarten. So we really rely on being able to find somebody who can be the helper at the other end. And it needs to be a person that's working with the client a lot of the time, because we need to be transferring what we're teaching in a therapy session into the child's everyday environment. So we have to, sometimes it's very hard to find that person. I've got an example at the moment where there's a little boy in a community in far north Queensland, and he's got Better Start funding. He has Down syndrome. He's Indigenous. And the workers in the town know that he's eligible to get services, and the people that fly in and fly out every, maybe every 3 months are really keen for him to get additional services. But we're having a lot of difficulty trying to find a helper and find an area where we could meet with internet, and also how we're going to arrange to have therapy activities for this child, or what kind of therapy activities are we going to have, because the speech pathologist that flies in from Weipa to this community, she can't leave all her therapy materials in town, because when she comes back, she doesn't know if they'll still be there. And so, there's just a whole lot of interesting difficulties. Simone and I often laugh together that we never do anything that's easy. We pick all the hard things. And so there's been hours and hours of trying to find a way to provide some services to this boy. And I'm afraid to say it's still in limbo, but we have had some successes with some of our other families that are in similar circumstances. So we work really hard to try and find out what the local services are and how we can work in together with them to be able to deliver a service. So we're just always trying to find a workaround. It's not always easy.
Yeah. I hear a little bit from people around the traps that telehealth is an easy option, and that you sort of just sit, easy option. You sit here and you've got your UGG boots on and it's talking therapy and all the rest of it. And I know from my conversations with you and Simone, and I catch up from time to time, that it is so much more. To do it really, really well, it is a really new and evolving service delivery model, and not one to be taken lightly at all. There is so much more to it than just booking a Skype session. On the back of that sort of comment, I'm curious to hear from you how you're managing it from a business perspective, because it's quite different from what you've both done in business, self-employment, paid employment. So what are some of the mechanics and challenges from a business point of view in delivering services this way?
Well, this is a really hot topic for us at the moment, Kathy.
Sorry.
Because we are acutely aware that in order to have some really great success, the investment time in both the setup of the telepractice and developing the relationships and the backstory, even before you start the therapy, is just so time consuming. And so in the research project that we're currently doing, which we might want to talk about in University of Sydney, what we've discovered is that families really value that. Are really valuing the time spent on communication with them and with the child's natural environment, whether that be the school. All of that takes time. So we are still trying to develop models of practice that are both going to not compromise service but still going to be, good for business. And, there's no easy, fast solution to that at the moment.
Yeah. The NDI. Sue, have you got any further comments on the business side of it?
Well, I suppose that you don't find many helping professionals who say that they measure their satisfaction or, by just the dollars in the bank. I mean, certainly from a business point of view, you need to be generating an income. But I think that we're working hard and having some successes that they're measured in good outcomes for families, but not necessarily by dollars in the bank for us. Mm-hmm. So, people who think that it's the easy option, I think that they'd be completely mistaken. And as you can imagine, we need to make sure that the families at the other end are organised with all their therapy materials, because we can't just open the cupboard if that game's not appealing to the child this week. We can't just open the cupboard and get the game that we know that's going to be great for them. So we've got to have the parent ready with a whole lot of options available to them so that they can be providing the therapy as well. And they need to do things in advance to get ready. They need to photocopy things or gather up materials to have them ready, put them in a box, they have to be set up in a good spot for us to be able to see them, and they have to make sure the other children are being looked after. They can't, we can't have the whole family in the room all of the time. It's just nice to say good day to the others, but the parents need to be organised at their end.
Yeah.
So, and I think that the the time that goes into adapting the therapy strategy that you're seeking, so you're spending so much time trying to adapt what you would be doing in a face-to-face context in an online practice, and that takes a certain mind shift in terms of how can I adapt what I would achieve in a face-to-face context in a telepractice setting, whether that be with real materials or digital materials or a coach approach. So there's a lot of preparation time.
Yeah. And I guess my business brain is sort of just popping with, you've got to rework checklists, or you've got to have checklists to help people get ready. You've got to coach them to be ready for a different way of receiving and participating in services. Your service agreements are going to be completely different. If you're recording and storing data and video, there's just so many bits that just are a little left of left of center, that you would have had to map and produce.
Yep, that's correct. And once we store things in the cloud, once we've got something for one client, then we can store it and use it, of course, for other clients. And some resources are already presented in a digital way. So I've been really pleased when I've been looking for things to buy. If I can buy the ebook instead of the hard copy book, then that's been really useful. And I've been looking around on the internet to find resources that are really going to be suitable for online therapy. And often they're things I wouldn't use if I had the child in the room with me. Like, I wouldn't necessarily go for a high-tech alternative. But online, there's some really great language programs that I subscribe to. We can use those in therapy by screen sharing, and then the family can log on to that same program and continue, and it's all cumulative, and they can use that on their iPad or on their computer. Everybody seems to have an iPad or a computer. I mean, people couldn't have therapy if they didn't have a computer, a laptop, a camera and a microphone. But sometimes we've been able to purchase the things that are needed for the child so that through their funding. So I guess that's going to be a little bit more difficult with the NDIS. But there's been a good case to be able to purchase iPads for children with autism, for instance, that can be used for their therapy, but it can also be used for our online conferencing as well. So,
wow, that's good to hear. Where are you guys and the NDIS up to in terms of supporting teletherapy?
Well, we're very fortunate that the NDIS agreed to support teletherapy. That happened a couple of years ago. So when I first tried to register my original business, I said that they wouldn't support telepractice. Never really got to the bottom of that, but after making a case for how it was used, they did accept that. Simone and I are very excited that we are finally registered in every state and territory to provide early childhood supports and therapeutic support. So
fantastic. That is a monster piece of work.
And it was interesting, Kathy, I was watching your last workshop, and I was listening to Chantel Robards and different people talking about their experiences with early childhood, early intervention. And we have to try and figure out how every state is operating. So certainly New South Wales, they, as she was saying, they haven't tended out to early childhood, early intervention partners. But so the people who were all providing early intervention services are continuing to do so. So that's a whole lot of people that we need to communicate with. Then in South Australia, the NDIS has established their own early intervention team, and so we need to communicate with them. In Victoria, there are different organisations partnering all around the state. So it's hard enough for people trying to figure out what's going on in one state with the NDIS and learn to work in one state, but we're trying to do that for every state.
My goodness, what were you thinking? This is doing it the hard way, but enjoy the learning curve, I say. Gosh, goodness. I would love to hear a little bit about the research that you've done with University of Sydney. I sort of heard a little bit about the start of it, and I've heard that it's been a really interesting process, but bring me up to speed about what it was and what the outcomes have been.
So, Cathy, we are still continuing with the research. We've just had a meeting that we've looked at some preliminary results. The project is titled Connecting Rural Children to Therapy Supports via telepractice. So we are really looking at, I suppose, the perceptions of families, the perceptions of families in terms of acceptability, effectiveness, feasibility, how they feel about it, whether they feel that it's easy to build rapport, whether they feel that their children are achieving their goals, whether they feel that telepractice is meeting their needs within that child's natural setting. And so a case study analysis. And what we have found is that some of the myths have been debunked, if you like. So some of the myths, or well, actually all of the myths that we came up with around how difficult it is, for instance, to build rapport online, you know, families are citing that's just not an issue at all, that the children, quotes, take to the online therapy like a duck to water, for instance. So building rapport was not an issue. The families really wanted access, and they wanted access to expertise, and that was available, and that was a game changer. So in a couple of families' cases where they had the option of face-to-face therapy, they made pretty profound statements that they would consider staying with telepractice because it was, in their view, all about the expertise and the access. And I guess it's superior only in the eyes of what the family is seeking to get out of the service. So I feel that as long as Sue and I are consistent and that Therapy Connect is meeting the needs of families, you know, we know that, you know, that they're going to be satisfied. Yeah, Sue, would you add anything else?
Not really, Simone. I agree with you that the original findings were that parents have enjoyed the fact that we are very experienced, and they've valued our communication with the other people in the team, and they need the regular access, and that's what a lot of them have been missing out on. Even thinking about a new client I've just started with that hasn't been involved in the research because the child doesn't have a disability. He has a mild, well, he has an articulation problem, so he wouldn't be eligible for any disability support. But this mum said, oh, well, I think that I'll do online therapy. I'm so pleased to hear about you. I'll do online therapy until I can get an appointment with the people in Alice Springs. But after the first week, we'd had one session. The next week she said, well, actually, do you think I need to go to Alice Springs for therapy? And I said, look, you know, that's entirely up to you to do whichever way you think. But I think she was pretty surprised with the positive outcomes and the fact that she's a great teacher. She's already been incorporating all these activities into, you know, book sharing and that kind of thing that I haven't asked her to do. So she's just a natural teacher. And, I mean, these guys are teaching their children at school of the year a lot of the time anyway, aren't they? So they've got a lot of skills, and that's been good.
Nice. Simone, I think, mentioned a couple of minutes ago about using a coach approach. So any opportunity that I ever take or see about talking about coaching, I'm really happy to jump on. How has that been useful in delivering teletherapy?
Well, I guess in a way it's a no-brainer in that we are removed physically from the environment. So we are really requiring the therapy facilitator, whoever we are working with, we're requiring them to sort of be able to reproduce what we're doing, to adapt strategies and skills and approaches into a child's daily routine, into their natural settings. So whilst on one hand we're wanting to skill build, on the other hand we're wanting to maximise practice of skill building, and that there comes with the coach approach. So yes, Sue and I feel that we, you know, it's just embedded in what we do. Really?
I think been a common thing in speech pathology, Kathy, that we would have always said that that's what we do. We have the parent in the room. They become the agent for therapy. But in practice, you know, we say we're going to do that, but in practice, it's much more fun to be the one that's interacting with the child. We, you know, we have great skills at getting children to engage. And so we really enjoy being the one who provides the therapy. I know when I've been training students, I've always wanted them to have a goal around how they're going to include the family, because they're also wanting to try out their skills and don't always give the parent the opportunity. And that's what we should be doing, is giving the parent feedback. And so when we started learning how to do telepractice, we just had to sit on our hands and think, now, well, how am I going to get the parent to do this? And the little boy that I've just started with this articulation problem, for instance, I've just seen his brother as well, and his brother has a lisp. And it's really hard to hear a high-frequency sound like an S, like a sound, online. So I can't really hear whether it's correct or not. So I have to teach the mum all about the language that she needs to know about, so that she can evaluate whether his attempts are close to the mark or a long way from the mark. It's going to be a little bit harder for us to get started with this sound and get him to get it right. But once she's got that skill, then she'll be able to give him feedback all the time and be able to help him to get it right. So she'll know all the language to use, and she becomes a therapist. So I think it's got bonuses.
I think that's the exact thing that Sue's just said, that it takes longer, but it has longer lasting effects, is really the key.
Yeah.
So parents have to see the value in that, to be valuing learning these things. They have to see the value of that if they're paying you to not do therapy, but to coach.
Yeah. And to be up to participate at that level and that frequency and intensity. So on the topic of value, your value is flowing offshore. And I recall that when you were setting up this business, you very much had your sights on a global sort of business. And I've heard Sue mentioned Japan and Hong Kong and all the rest of it. Where are you reaching to at the moment with your teletherapy?
A lot of therapy in Japan, so school-aged children in Japan. And the way that happened, it wasn't so much our goal to try to attract overseas business. It was an unexpected aspect, really, that people from overseas that were looking online for services were Googling, were finding our services, and that's how that really started. The first client I had online was a family in Thailand, where there was a young Australian woman who'd moved to Thailand, and she'd adopted three Thai children, and one of them had really serious speech and language development problems. And so that was my first experience of doing therapy overseas. It was quite different. And then Mona and I went and had a look at Vietnam, because we had some clients who were Vietnamese, and Simone's sister used to live in Vietnam, and she thought it'd be great for us to have a look there. So we went there and we went to some schools. And then a neuropsychologist in Tokyo she came to Australia for a conference, and she found out that there was an availability of teleconference online therapies. And so she put our website on her website, and eventually we've built up quite a relationship with her and been working together with a lot of clients. And so the word of mouth has been successful in Japan. And it's interesting that a new little fellow that I've been working with, the boy I saw today, his mum is French and his father is Japanese, and his mum is a corporate person and she's working in Hong Kong at the moment. And so the language in the home is English, because that's the only common language that they have. So she's having some therapy for this boy in English, but because they're on holidays in Hong Kong, then I've been seeing them in Hong Kong. So it's great, isn't it, that when they're home in Japan, then we can provide therapy, and then when they go away, we can provide therapy again. And I've got a little boy who's Hawaiian but lives in Japan as an expat, and he's on holidays in Hawaii at the moment. I've been seeing him there. So it's interesting.
Of course. I never thought of actually being able to continue service. It just is not geography dependent at all. You've just got to know your time zones. And good to go.
That's right. And can lead to some confusion. But Simone's got a lovely example of working overseas with a boy.
So, Kathy, from connection in Vietnam, there was a family that made contact. They were an American family, actually, living in Vietnam. They wanted weekly occupational therapy, a session for mum each week and a session with the child and the home help. And when it came holiday time, they decided that their son was going with the friend to Italy for 5 weeks, and they asked me to join them for their holiday, not literally, but via telegraph. So we had sessions in Italy, which was extraordinary. And then right at the end of the holiday, we decided to try and have a three-way handover. So I had my first multi-global, multi-continent Europe, Australia and Asia meeting, where we had your mum, therapist, and the friend and the child in Italy. So that was extraordinary. Yeah.
Well done. That's amazing.
We're sort of a little bit blasé to it now, but at the beginning it was incredibly exciting. And to think that you could be working with a Czechoslovakian family on social skills that live in Japan, because there's no English-speaking occupational therapist in the area that they live in. And that's the school, that's the language that they're being taught in. So they're after an English-speaking therapist. Mm. So,
and delivering that from rural and gorgeous New South Wales.
I know, who would have thought?
Amazing.
There's someone in the world that needs an OT, I thought, and voila.
That would be me and my friend Sue. Absolutely amazing. What has your business taught you in the last 2 or 3 years? Keeping it polite, this is G-rated.
Yeah.
I guess Simone, this is what happens when you're on Zoom, isn't it? A small delay. I was just going to say that it's great to have a great idea in business, but for me, when I first started to think about this, I thought there's so many children in remote areas of Australia who could benefit from therapy that aren't able to access it. And it's great to have a good idea, but in establishing our business, I've learned that you really need to be patient, and it takes a long time to establish something that's so new and innovative and not already completely accepted by other professionals or families. And one of the really big difficulties is to let families even know about the possibility of online therapy. They don't even know to look for it because they don't even know about it. So we're really, you know, at the trailblazers at that cutting edge, pioneering. And so we really have to try and get the word out. And sometimes people like people in the NDIS or helping children with autism programs, they feel that they can't promote your business in front of others, but we're just trying to get them to just let families know that they have choices about this.
So you've learned about patience and turning creative ideas into reality and outcomes.
Yes, yes. And measuring your successes by the outcomes, the outcomes for clients perhaps, rather than the dollars in the bank.
Yep.
We're hoping that's going to follow, Kathy.
Any day now. Oh, there's no reason why it won't. Goodness me. Simone, what has business, the last couple of years in business, taught you?
Well, I guess it's taught me that, honestly, anything is possible if you're willing to stick with it for long enough. And who would have thought that this idea has now translated into a business with Sue, where potentially able to reach people that are far more isolated than Sue and I are for support. So it's taught me, I guess, that, you know, anything's possible with the idea, but oh my goodness, hasn't it taught me that perseverance, you know, being adaptable, being patient, and just being jolly committed is what it takes to sort of, I suppose, turn something into success.
Yeah.
I think it's exciting to think that for someone like me that's such, you know, a late career speech pathologist, a dinosaur in terms of technology, if anyone, you know, if it can be, if I can do this, anybody can do this. And I believe that Simone and I probably the most experienced online speech and OTs in Australia. And so from being a generalist and doing everything in a country hospital to finally having a specialty of telehealth or telepractice now is it's a really great feeling of satisfaction.
Huge achievement, absolutely. And to be committed to developing the research around what you're doing is incredible, absolutely incredible.
Well, I think, Kathy, we both are acutely aware that one of our biggest challenges, as Sue's already highlighted, is the mindset. Mm. Mindset of both professionals about the idea of how effective telepractice could be, but the mindset of a family. How could you possibly convince somebody to give telepractice a go? Well, what the research is showing is that you really need to nearly make it a free service initially to convince people that it is going to be a winner. And in fact, that's sort of what we do. We offer a free initial trial. The idea of the research contributing to the body of evidence that supports telepractice as an industry, we are committed to, because we know we want it to be a healthy, strong industry. We, you know, it is new, but yeah, we want to contribute to that building of that evidence.
Oh, absolutely amazing. What is your business plan looking like for the next 12 months or so? And don't both avoid eye contact with me at the one time. Plan.
Well, we're going to have a different marketing strategy. We've tried a variety of strategies so far, and I think it's difficult. You know, we've tried AdWords, and people would phone Simone and say, "Could you come and get the over bath chair from, or the shower chair from, pick it up from my house?" And they would just think that she was in Sydney around the corner from them. They don't realise that it's online. So we were attracting a lot of clients that were not suitable for us. We were getting a lot of inquiry from people, the wrong people. And so we looked at all of that, but it wasn't a great way to help our marketing. And we think we need to take a more targeted approach. And once again, none of these marketing strategies has any guarantees. It would be lovely to say, well, you know, if that works after 3 months, well, we will buy in and spend more money on this strategy. But you have to give each thing some time. And when you're a small enterprise, it's difficult to try and work out what percentage of your income that you want to devote to marketing up front. So those decisions are all completely new for me. I think Simone's got a better handle on the business things than I have. But,
don't know about that, Sue. Well, this is a question without notice, Kathy. So I certainly haven't got our business plan at hand, but I can tell you that we were very smart about this, and we engaged some University of Sydney Business Masters students to work with us on developing business plans as part of one of their subjects in rural innovative business development. So we know that in terms of the potential is phenomenal. We know that we need to invest in marketing because it's about
building
awareness of telepractice. And we know that people aren't going to search telepractitioner because they need to know what a telepractitioner is. So, and then it comes back then to looking at improving efficiencies and building our online resource library and our systems and, you know, all of that we know about. We've expanded in that we've partnered with another occupational therapist who has an interest in developing some Hong Kong work. So we're hoping to explore that as well. Yeah, so watch this space.
Oh, watch this little screen space. It's very exciting. What are you most proud of?
Oh, Kathy, I'm without a doubt most proud of the fact that Sue and I have managed to pull off what our hunch is and translate that into reading the preliminary evidence that is without a doubt telepractice is acceptable. It meets families' needs. They are thrilled by increasing access. They're thrilled by accessing expertise. So I'm most proud of that achievement. And personally, I think I'm most proud of hanging in there and really working hard to adapt a lot of resources that probably more OT-specific hands-on resources into that headspace of how can I do that
virtually.
Remotely.
Yeah. Sue, what are you most proud of?
Well, I think I was telling you what I was most proud of when I was talking about the fact that we've mastered the technology. You know, we've had to start from scratch. One of the things that I thought you might be interested in was the book that we valued the most, but there is no book about telepractice. And so I think Simone and I could write the book about telepractice. We have written
Maybe
some blogs.
You should.
We have written some blogs about how we practice and how it works. Yeah, but it's just been excellent to do something that's innovative and, you know, it's solving a problem for some people that are in remote areas. And I think Simone and I can both relate well to that because we've been in rural areas and we understand how sometimes people in rural areas feel like they're second-class citizens and not getting the same access to quality services, and it's great to be able to provide that for families.
Yeah, For sure. I'm going to ask you the 50 grand question because I think it's just so relevant to where you're up to and what you're setting out to do. So imagine that magical moment of checking your business bank account and there's this mysterious rainbow coloured 50 grand in there. You phone the bank. They are more than delighted to announce that a secret benefactor has gifted you the 50 grand. What would you guys use that for? And you can't just have a holiday.
So we can't just take it in wages.
No. Well, you could, but that wouldn't make for a very good story. How would you invest it in your business?
Kathy, I actually had decided what I would do with that money before you asked the question. And I have been really, one of the greatest challenges as an OT is there's no colleagues that are doing similar. So all of my knowledge base has come from America, and I have made friends with a wonderful OT over in Ohio who has her practice. She started, I think, 12 or so years ago and now employs 20 OTs. And her philosophy is very similar to the way Sue and I work. And I would spend some of that money. I couldn't have the entire, I'd have to share that with Sue, but some of the money I would spend traveling over and really looking closely at Melanie's work and seeing what we could take from that to adapt to our own practice. And then, yeah, probably marketing would be
the rest. Heating up marketing. Sue, in the small portion that you have left after Simone has jetted off to the States, what would you invest it in?
I'd want advice about marketing and business systems, I suppose. I'd love someone to provide me with some IT support. I'm sure that we're using IT all the time. I sit in front of my computer all of the time. I'm sure there's ways that we could do things much more easily if we only knew that they existed. So I suppose I'd want some closer IT backup and some advice about marketing and business systems.
Yeah. Yep. That all seems really, really timely. So I've been asking you lots of questions. I give my guests the chance to ask me a question. Is that something you've thought about and schemed and plotted? And is there anything you want to ask?
We haven't plotted at all, but I do have a question. And I just wonder about what your perceptions are of quality of online therapy in comparison to face-to-face. What would be your, what advice would you give to your sister-in-law or your friend who had a child that
That's a really good question, because I get to have conversations with allied health business owners all over the country every day, and I kind of alluded earlier that there is some thinking that it's an easy, convenient way and you just meet up on Skype and it goes from there. But I know from my conversations with you too that there is so much more to it to do it really well and with efficacy and the outcomes that you want. So I guess to answer your question, it is so dependent on the tech fluency and the tech confidence that the clinician has and their understanding of what else it takes to deliver an arm's length service, but also from a participant point of view, I would really want to be sure that my sister-in-law in this case is really confident with the technology, is able to manage the rest of the family for the 50 minutes, that they've thought through about what they want out of it as well and how it's going to be potentially different or enhance the face-to-face services that they've got with other local providers. So Simone, you mentioned mindset, and for me, it's all about mindset, but it's also about really investing in your whole head and heart that it is a really workable, positive option for you and your family at that point.
And do you know what, Kathy? For those of you that have a choice, it's obvious. But for those that don't have a choice and who have no childcare and who even need to drive half an hour to access internet, you know, I can give you an example of where Sue and I have had to resolve all of these issues that you've just spoken about as part of our role of clinicians. You know, we're doing sessions in a school library where the library assistant is looking after the toddler so mum can work with, you know, me and the child. And, you know, what you've just said is really exactly what we hear a lot and what in reality we find. But it takes that we just need to get going. You know, it's making the decision of we need to get going to resolve these issues along the way that's the risk that families are taking. And for those that have another choice, you know, why would you take that risk? But for those families who don't have another choice, it's easy because there's no other choice.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
And you really don't have to be techno-savvy. I have one client who the mother rang me and she didn't realise we were telepractitioners. And she said, I don't even know how to work my phone properly. And I said, well, I think we can help you. So we ended up finding, you know, an Indigenous health worker who could support her in and bring her laptop around and support her to use the technology. So there's always a way if it's needed.
Yep. It's about mindset and it's about how much you want it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Cool. Well, I am your biggest fan. I'm still your biggest fan and I am just delighted that I'm now up to date with your awesomeness and what you're up to. I'm going to give one of you guys the last say, and that is about giving you the chance to pitch if you like or to kind of let people know about your website, what you're doing. And so at this point for listeners, where they're pointing to each other across the screens. So throw us a summary, call people to have a look at your website, whether there's any reading or anything you would like any of the listeners to kind of do for you. So I'll just throw the talking stick across. And I might add at this point, we are hundreds and hundreds of kilometres apart in recording this podcast. We're in different parts of the country, but getting some leverage out of tech. So that's why you're hearing some of the pauses and why we're using each other's names so that we can keep the fluency going. So who is going to have the last word, Sue or Simone?
Okay, I can see Sue's reluctant. Well, I guess what I would do if I had to pitch Therapy Connect is to sell the fact that we have evidence that telepractice with Therapy Connect is acceptable, goals are achieved, and families have really been highly satisfied. I don't know what more you would want from your therapy service, but for those who are interested in telepractice, to make contact with us, find us at www.therapyconnect.com.au. Check out our Facebook page, which has got a lot of real images of Sue and I working with children and families across Australia and overseas. And, join in the potential shift of mindset that you might sort of have with the idea that if you try, you might be surprised.
Love it. Thank you, Sue. Thank you, Simone. That is amazing. Yeah, I look forward to maybe seeing you face-to-face at some point in the next year. We'll see how we could rustle that up. Thank you. We will put links to your website and any other bits and pieces that we've referenced in the show notes. But thank you so much for carving some time out of your day for a bit of a natter.
Thanks, Kathy.
See you later. A big thank you for investing your time right through the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. We hope you really enjoyed the conversation. There's lots more just like it waiting for your listening ears. If you're running a private practice and keen for some more business know-how and confidence, head on over to my website, nakerconsulting.com.au. There you'll find business resources and inspiration. There's blogs, forms, templates. There's information about our conferences, workshops, web events, and more. While you're there, you're warmly invited to book yourself in for a free 30-minute coaching session. Let's find some solutions to your current business challenges. And yes, you are more than welcome to pick my brains. My business has a weird name, but it has a cool story. You can read about that when you're on the website. But let me spell it for you now. nacre.com.au. Thank you for listening to Private Practice Secrets. I'm Kathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, wishing you and your business a brilliant day.